Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
Chicago, it's no mystery that Chevy is your best bet for the unpredictable spring ahead. The snow and ice may be gone, but the spring plot thickens at your local Chevy dealer, where you'll find the true MO of SUVs. If you're thinking about taking all the twists and turns in a new Chevy, you're not alone. The right vehicle makes all the difference when it comes to safety, confidence, and comfort on the road. You saw the Chevy lineup at the auto show. Now it's time to see which one you can identify. And don't worry, they can't see you behind the glass. Need the power and durability of a Silverado? The all-weather confidence of an Equinox or Blazer? The spacious comfort of a Traverse, Tahoe, or Suburban? Or the sporty city-friendly Trax? Your local Chevy dealer has exactly what you need to solve the case like a pro. So don't wait. Head to ChevyDriveChicago.com today. Browse the newest models, special offers, locate your nearest Chevy dealer, and start shopping online. Things are warming up out there, and you need a vehicle you can trust. Find yours now at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Chevy, together, let's drive.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey there, Thunder Buddies and Travelers Down Thunder Road. It's us, Days of Thunder, the WCW Thunder Rewatch podcast that you didn't ask for, but we did anyway, coming to you as part of the Voice of Wrestling podcast network and powered by alargemanappears.com. I am your host, not Dave Ryan. I am Stagger Lee Malone. And we have reached the point of the podcast that I have personally been dreading slash looking forward to since we began this show, as Dave has reached the end of his tether and decided to take some time off. It's actually some well-deserved time, as he has just welcomed his first child into the world. So if Dave ever listens back to this, I'm sure he'll be very amused at me trying to do a carbon copy, I hope, of his introduction. But while Dave is off, I am having what I am titling the Days of Thunder special edition episodes. And as you can see by the title of the show, as you, when you press record, this is the special edition number one, the Sabu sandwich. And this sandwich has been compiled by my co-host today. It's everybody's friend, Miss Erin Quinn. Erin, how are you?
I'm so good, and I'm hungry for some Sabu.
But before we get into your delicious creation, the Sabu sandwich, we should say it's a take on one of our Patreon shows that we came up with. Obviously, patreon.com/WCW Thunderpod. We like to do what we call the skip scramble, because as you are aware, you should never order the skip scramble. But we came up with this idea where we will have a random selection of matches that we will sit down and review together. And being that this is the first show that Dave will miss, I will not be doing a regular Days of Thunder episodes while Dave is gone. I thought it wouldn't be appropriate to cover Thunder in Dave's absence. So instead, I will have a series of guests, of which you are the first. And yes, I thought it was only appropriate, given the vast knowledge that you have of the wide wrestling world, that with only a certain amount of limitations put on you, to see what a unique list you could come up with. So why don't you tell me how you came to create what we are titling the Sabu Sandwich?
Yeah, thanks again for having me on. I really enjoy, I've not behind the paywall this time, so pretty exciting there. So glad to be on the main feed.
I mean, I feel like you've been on our show many, many times, but have they all been behind the paywall?
I think with the exception of maybe one. I don't think
so. Okay.
Yeah. So I really appreciate this invite. You know, Days of Thunder is a delightful show. You and Lee do such a great job. Wait a minute.
Me and Lee? Me and Dave?
Yeah, wait, no.
I am Lee.
Oh, my God. Okay, so let me explain why I did that slip up. Because you...
The name in front of you.
You are logged into Dave's Zoom account, aren't you?
I am, because the Dave uses Zoom a lot more, so we decided to splurge for the professional Zoom account on his under his name.
Yes, yeah, so this made me, as I was going to pay compliments to my friends, this at the very last minute when my mouse scrolled over our windows here gave me a moment of pause.
Put some doubt in your mind.
Yeah, so... like a 12-year-old Erin not remembering who's Shanghai Pierce and who is Tech Slasinger.
I was going to say Mark Canterbury, but he was Shanghai Pierce, wasn't he?
I don't know. I still don't know.
Yeah, Shanghai Pierce was Mark Canterbury / Midian.
Was Shanghai Pierce the one in the mask?
And Tech Slasinger was the other one.
Are we sure?
Maybe.
I can't remember. I thought... So the point being, this put a doubt in my mind. So I went with what I was seeing on the screen in front of me. I colossally messed up. This is something that happens when you know a person for years and years, mostly through audio.
Yes.
So, you and Dave do a great job.
Thank you.
It's been a comfort on many a long, lonely night. And I'm just honored to be able to bring to you what I think is a series of matches that are my wrestling comfort food. If I want to just relax and not worry about wrestling too much, this is what I put on the plate. I make a delicious sandwich with these ingredients.
I see. So is there a particular reason that Sabu is the opening and closing of this sandwich? He is, as we shall say, the bread of this episode.
He is bread. He is the bread of it. And what is a table but like the bread of furniture? It's flat. it's pretty much a flat surface that you can set anything on. So, but I also chose, because Sabu is like my comfort wrestler. When I want to just have a good time, I watch a Sabu match. You don't have to think about it that hard. you can just enjoy the ride. I think his career goes on so long, you can find a large array of opponents. He's one of those wrestlers where you can find he wrestled a lot of people. And I'll go into a little bit more about why I like Sabu once we get into these matches. But I think you can tell by the two different opponents that we are watching him take on today. He has a varied career for someone whose peak was maybe, you know, 5-6 years.
Yeah, I love that you said, like, his career went on so long and he had such a variety of opponents. And you are correct. He did have a long career and many different styles of opponents. And yet the two matches you selected both take place within, I think, like 8 months of each other.
Yes.
But the opponents are very varied. I'll give you that one. But before we get into the guts of our sandwich and start breaking it down, I want to talk about, because, you know, AEW Revolution is on in 24 hours from when we were recording this. I have been very, and I've been open about this on the show, I've been kind of pretty out on current day wrestling. Like, WWE does nothing for me. AEW is struggling, maybe not because of what they're putting on, but more just because of lack of time on my end. So I'm not as invested in current day AEW or wrestling in general as I have been previously. So where are you at this moment in 2025 with what you're watching and what you're seeing?
Despite my performance on a recent five-star match game focused on AEW, I actually am pretty locked into the company. I would classify myself as a pretty hardcore AEW defender because I find their existence essential to wrestling. And this pay-per-view, even if you are checked out, even if you have not paid attention at all, just looking at the lineup gets me shaky in the britches. This lineup is so exciting. This show is going to be so good. It is going to be one of the better wrestling pay-per-views named Revolution that we've ever seen. There's this year, there's last year with Sting, there's WWA Revolution. This card is almost like top to bottom, almost nothing but great looking matches. So if it delivers, it will be another all-timer pay-per-view, and everyone will be excited about AEW for about 3 days. And
until Mike Johnson puts out another report. Like I said, I haven't been as invested, but the card is incredible. I have bought the pay-per-view. Like 24 hours out, I have paid for the pay-per-view. I do think things are starting to improve. There is definitely, you know, positive signs that things are getting better for AEW. I think the presentation of the show with the smaller arenas has really helped things. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Like, I probably will not be online from basically Sunday evening Irish time until maybe Tuesday, depending on when I get to watch the show. Like, if I get to watch the show on Monday evening after I get home, I will watch it. Yeah, like, it's just, I'm hoping to stay unspoiled because the card is so incredible. I'm hopeful more than I've been in a long time with any current day wrestling. And hey, at least WrestleMania looks to be somewhat interesting because of all of the shit that might go down. So that's also, you know, giving me a bit of cheer.
I like WWE being in a place where I just want crazy things to happen because I have no investment.
Embrace the chaos.
Yeah. I don't want AEW to get to that point because I know I'm detached.
They've been there.
I do think this show is probably the pay-per-view, because I think everyone gets excited for the AEW pay-per-views. Like Friday, Saturday before, everyone gets pretty jazzed for them. I think this is the one for the first time in a while where the actual build on TV has actually been clicking for people. and it's matched up with the excitement from just the pure nerdy work rate standpoint. It's nice to see both of those things kind of hitting at the same time.
It's the first time I can remember pretty much all of the main stories, like maybe the top five, top six matches on the show, all of the stories have peaked at a pay-per-view instead of 2 weeks, 3 weeks before the actual pay-per-view. So that's a nice thing to have happening. And hey, I guess after his press conference, we can all thank Tony Khan because he's back in charge again.
Yeah. He's very, you know,
he's a modern day Barry Horowitz. He loves to tap himself on the back.
You know, I think we've been, there's another man who's been giving himself a lot of credit for running the show at a major wrestling company lately. I think Tony can give himself a little bit of credit too.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair.
Talking about Paul.
You can't say his name. He doesn't like being in the spotlight.
I hope I can go online and see people being upset that Tony would praise himself. I need to see someone. Oh.
Who does this man think he is? When has ever a promoter put himself over?
Superman punch Y2K saying, Tony put himself before the wrestlers. I can't believe this money mark. Nepo baby. I know.
And what promoter has ever put themselves over on television?
Oh my gosh, no one.
Listen. But that's enough modern talk. Let's get into...
Except Evolve debuted the other night.
Listen, I am not touching that. It's a WWE product. Second of all, Pete Rosenberg is the fucking commentator. And third of all, no.
Okay, well, anyone in the Voice of Wrestling Discord can scroll back and watch the big crash out I had while Evolve was happening as I watched it in real time.
I'm sure you were losing your mind in all of the best ways. I think you and Griffin Peltier were the only ones watching live.
I think so. I mean, it was an experience, so.
But anyway, as I said, we're going to get into what you titled the Sabu Sandwich.
Yum.
So I'm going to run down. We have seven matches that you selected. So we open with Jim Neidhart taking on the aforementioned Sabu, which takes place in, I didn't take the date down, I think it was 1993?
Yeah, so this match is from May 12th, 1993. It's from the National Wrestling Council, which was an independent out of Las Vegas, the NWC.
Okay. See, I thought it was Nevada Wrestling Council.
What did I say?
But National would make more sense.
I think it was National.
Yeah. But, this was not a match I would ever have expected to see. And, you know, my first thing seeing this, and I believe this is a TV taping because they keep saying NWC Slammin'.
Slammin'. Great name.
Slammin' without a G. Without a G and with an apostrophe, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing that really stood out to me is, hey, the Anvil was in good shape.
Yeah, no, he came ready. This was his shot. It's for the NWC World title. This is probably my favorite Jim Neidhart singles match I've ever watched.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I know. Big claim.
Big, you know, that's a big claim because, you know, all of the classics that we can think of when we think of Jim Neidhart singles matches.
Well, this is one reason why I really like Sabu. Because Sabu, yeah. And I made this point with Rich a couple of years ago on some audio. Sabu is a lot like Ric Flair, and I'll explain. Ric Flair is going to do the Ric Flair match. You know, you're going to get to slam him, you're going to get to clothesline him, you're going to get to flex in his direction, and then he's going to put you over. Sabu is going to bring you into the Sabu match, where if you want to get over, you have to play the game with him. You can throw chairs at him. You can put him through tables. He'll do it back to you. And the best Sabu matches, in my opinion, are when guys you would not expect to go along with it, go along with it. And this match has the Anvil doing power slams through tables, holding chairs, doing power bombs.
I mean, this match, I think, was just epitomized by Sabu just throwing his body in any which way towards the anvil, and the anvil just getting up and, you know, like you said, using power moves or forearms to just discombobulate Sabu all throughout the match. It's the opening of this video. So I'm assuming this was supposed to be the start of the show,
I guess,
where we get an outside shot of people waiting at a doorway, and then Sabu storms in when his name is mentioned and begins attacking people in the crowd.
Yeah, well, a lot of these shows, I know a few NWC shows they do, you know, at those ballrooms right adjacent to casinos.
Okay.
And so Cactus and Sabu had a couple of noteworthy tape trading matches in NWC where they fought into a casino.
Ah, okay.
Sabu looks like he's coming from a photo shoot, and then he dives into the crowd. It's how you want to start a Sabu match.
Yeah, and then we get the entrance of Anvil and Sabu. I did like that the commentators are taking shots at all of the paper champions across America, as Sabu is here all of the time defending his title, apparently. He's a fighting champ, is our suicidal, homicidal, genocidal Sabu.
So, yeah, so Sabu... Oh, I had a wrong note here. For some reason, no.
Oh.
That is a wrong note. I'm looking at my notes, and I made a complete factual inaccuracy.
Oh, well, you know, you can't say that and then not say it.
No, I thought for some reason that this was 1995. Oh, it is 1995. This is from 95.
Oh, okay.
Oh my God, what is wrong with me today? I've had a week.
I could have sworn it said 93 on the video because I thought it was 93.
No, it is 95. I was thinking, I don't. This is one of those Berenstain Bears kind of thing. But no, so this was, you know, Sabu was probably a fighting champion. This was during his brief exile period from ECW, before, after the three-way dance, but before he came back at November to Remember, I believe, that year. Yeah, so there's a lot of brawling here. It really, this match for me is all about the anvil. So there's this giant power slam on the outside through a table.
Yeah, the table doesn't break the first time, so Anvil just picks him up and does it again.
Is this the first table that Jim Neidhart has ever broken in a wrestling match?
I mean, it's 95, so maybe.
Probably, right? Like,
yeah.
The other... And did you notice the other table bump in this match and what it came off of?
Was that the... Well, I know Sabu tries to break a table with a moonsault.
Mm-hmm.
When he, like, I think he throws Anvil into, like, the ring post, but that's pre-power slam. And let me check my notes. Sabu goes through another table. Oh, Anvil forearms him, and he just kind of falls off the apron through a table.
So for those who can't visualize it, Anvil had Sabu, like Sheamus, will have people draped over the rope. And then in a physics-defying blow... Sabu is rocked in the chest, which causes him to lurch forward and flip through a table. And this is where I realized, wow, Sabu is like Ric Flair. He is bumping his body all over to make this guy. It's really just Sabu's version of being thrown off the top rope.
Could he not think of another way to be put through a table? It was just like, I'm going to forearm you and you're going to flip dive through a table.
He also could not tell Jim Neidhart another way to put him through the table.
I think that's quite possible as well. Anvil's like, look, I power slammed you once. That's enough.
I only got a couple of moves here, brother. Did you notice, though, this match is also one of my favorite matches because did you notice Jim Neidhart invent the Rainmaker in this match?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was fucking, that rules. Like, he can't remember what he has. He has him in some kind of rest hold.
A cobra clutch.
And yes. And as they're getting to their feet and you think, you know, Sabu is going to do the classic elbows to the stomach. No. Anvil just winds up and hits a Rainmaker out of nowhere.
Yeah. So like I said, like Jim Neidhart brought it. He did a fucking Rainmaker out of a cobra clutch.
Can I swear on this? I'm sorry. Like,
Of course you can.
Yeah, Jim Neidhart. Jim Neidhart's doing Rainmakers and shit.
Listen, we make fucking Mike Enos jokes. Of course.
Oh, right. Oh, those are jokes.
Oh, wow. Sorry. I thought they were funny.
I thought you all just.
Ouch.
So, you know, we get the power bomb, which is incorrectly called the power slam at first by the commentary team.
Mm-hmm.
And
Anvil getting the visual pin and then deciding to, you know, he pulls Sabu up at two.
There is a lot of protecting the anvil at the end of this.
Yes. Gotta be protected in Nevada.
Yeah, no, I mean, is he from Nevada? Is that the reason he's in this match?
I don't think so. I think he lived there at one point, but I thought Anvil was like Louisiana somewhere.
Maybe he lives there at this time. Maybe this is the local kid trying to make
because
good.
Didn't he start in Mid-South before going up to Stampede?
I think so.
It's possible maybe he just played football in that area of the country, but, you know.
Football is popular.
He married a heart, so in my head canon, he's Canadian, so.
Oh, yeah, Anvil does the power bomb and lifts Sabu up, then gets taken down with a Hurricane Rana and a roll-up off the next power bomb, and a very fast three count, much faster than the other three counts before.
You know, as we'll see as we go through these matches, there's a lot of unexpected Hurricane Ranas in these matches that lead to places I did not expect these matches to go. That's a little teaser for some upcoming matches.
You know, what can I say? I love when legs go around heads and unexpected things happen.
Wow. Okay. Well, speaking of unexpected, let's move on to our second match. As you said, Sabu retained his NWC title and, you know, survived to fight another day.
I encourage anyone champion. To go find some NWC. This would also, I would be remiss if I didn't, the Anvil is canceled. This is the promotion where he wore a, white garments to, beat up Virgil for an angle.
Oh yeah. I have seen that angle.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. But
who'd have thought who wasn't his worst gimmick?
who would have known?
Okay, let's move on to our second match.
Yeah.
It is Abdullah the Butcher versus Zeus from World Wrestling Council in 1990. Now, I clicked into this match and I went, oh, Abby versus Zeus. Zeus must be like one of the local guys. Oh, how I was mistaken. Because, in fact, for those not aware, Zeus is the star of No Holds Barred. It's Tiny Lister Jr. himself in WWC. Aaron, you gotta tell me, do you know the backstory behind this?
No, I tried really hard last night. I was looking at the PWO board post about this match. I tried Wrestling Classics. I could not find how or why or what the connection was that made this match happen.
It blew my mind. So this has to be like a year post No Holds Barred, because No Holds Barred was what, 89?
It was 89, and I think Zeus's last appearance would have been maybe that 89 Survivor Series. And then they aired the match, the movie, on pay-per-view after that, I think.
Definitely, yeah, that's what happened, yeah.
So this would have been six, seven months after that show. So, I don't see, looking at this card, what the obvious connection would be to, there is an appearance by RoboCop on this, apparently. Someone dressed up as RoboCop on this show also.
Which on the same show.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think this might have been just the case of they hired Tiny Lister to come down and have a match, quote unquote, with the with Abby. The Rougeaus are on this show too, so there you go. Can you tell me, without looking, 1990, who was one of the participants in the main event of this big WWC show?
1990. So you'd have to say Carlos Colon.
Yes.
Invader number one.
Well, no. That wasn't his opponent, but I just wanted you to guess Carlos Colon. Congratulations.
Okay.
It was TNT.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So is this the best Zeus match ever?
For
my money, it might be.
I mean, it's better than anything he did with Hogan.
And that's with the only things that he did. So
yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you can call this a match.
I think stuff
happens in a ring, but like, is it technically a match?
There was a beginning, there was a middle, there was something that resembled an ending.
Yeah, I suppose.
There was a ref.
You know what really surprised me? Hmm. There were Zeus chants.
Yeah, a crowd was into this. They didn't need bunch of those space flying tiger drops or whatever. They were happy with Zeus's clubbing forearms.
Zeus's Grey Khali-esque chops to the head that busted open Abby.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be fair, with the state of Abdullah's forehead, I can buy that those punches busted him wide open.
Sure, I guess. Okay. I mean, what came to mind for me was, you know, the famous Bart Simpson and Lisa Simpson fight?
Yes, that is
where it's just like, I'm going to swing my arms wildly, and if you get in the way, that's your problem.
It really is. So, I wish Zeus had an extended run, because I have a note here that says, WWF Zeus is a bad, shitty worker. WWC Zeus is an awesome, shitty worker. There is this spring in his step at the beginning of this match, before he tires himself out. He's on the outside. He's clubbering Abby to the best of his abilities. At one point, he runs at Abdullah and chokes him. He ran at him.
He does a running choke,
and applied a running choke, which is like some kind of meta level of bad wrestling that if was intentional.
Is this going to be your fucking boom guy celebrities in wrestling are actually good moments?
If this was
on an AEW pre-show, would you be calling it a match of the year contender and writing think pieces on X, the Everything app, explaining why Zeus is one of the best, top 10 workers in the US currently?
I think this match is actually... This match really works because of the setting. I don't know if he popped up on Revolution tomorrow to fight Alex Reynolds, if it would be as good as this. But I think the fact that your mind starts to wonder, why did this happen? How did this happen? And since we don't know how the sausage was made in this case, the match is just so mysterious. Abdullah made a comeback, if you notice, mostly by attacking the aforementioned penis of Zeus.
I did like that Abby slowed things down for a little bit and got a nerve hold. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, it's Abby. You got to have a nerve hold to catch his breath.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the big spot of the match was Zeus blocking the fork.
Yeah, I was screaming, take the fork. Don't be a coward. Take it.
Were you saying as in he should take control of the fork, or he should take a fork shot to the head?
No, he should take the fork to the head. I can't believe he managed to negotiate his way out of that. There was another big spot in this match, which was the big monkey flip.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're being very generous.
Yes.
Calling it a monkey flip.
I am.
Abby left his feet. I'll give it that much credit.
Mm-hmm. And, Zeus, in another great example of intentional bad wrestling, I'm assuming he's just, this man's an actor. He's an artiste. Who am I to say if he's not just pretending to be a bad wrestler? He's on the outside on the apron. Abdullah's on the inside
of the ropes, and Zeus applies a bear hug, which is really peak. I don't know any moves, so no matter where I'm at in the ring, I'm gonna do my move.
Hogan taught me to do a bear hug, so I'm gonna do a bear hug. I will say, Zeus is a really big guy.
Yeah.
Zeus struggles to get his arms all the way around Abby.
Abdullah has girth.
Yes, he's a girthy boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, the bear hug through the ropes is definitely a new one. So he's innovative, I'll give him that.
Can you imagine? Do you think somewhere in Japan this tape made it over there and a young Yoshihiro Tajiri saw this and thought, submission moves around the ropes, eh?
I mean, sure, why not? Let's go with that. That's the reasoning. they basically break from the bear hug through the ropes and they brawl to the outside and the bell rings and we get a double DQ.
I can't believe with the celebrity and Abdullah that no one did the job.
I mean, Abby doesn't do jobs in WWC. That just doesn't happen. And you know, Zeus isn't laying down for anybody. So
no.
Mm-mm. Look, it's a match I never knew happened. I'm happy that I now know it did happen.
Yeah.
It's definitely a happening. That's all I'll say.
It occurred.
It definitely occurred. And speaking of things that occurred, and oh boy, I should have known when I gave you free rein to pick people and pick matches that there would be one match involving this person. We jump to 1997, the 23rd of November, WCW Pro. Mm-hmm. It's Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker.
Yep.
Taking on the NWO's Vincent. Now, I didn't know why you picked this match.
Did you figure it out?
Until I watched this match. And there's only one thing I want to talk about in this match.
Yeah.
So Vincent nearly commits murder on syndicated TV.
Yeah.
And then screams shit into the camera.
It is, yeah, this match is good for just one thing and one thing only. The sergeant is inside the ring. Virgil is outside the ring. Virgil picks him up for a suplex, drops back, and brainbusters Buddy Lee Parker on the ring apron.
No, I don't even think you could call it a brainbuster.
That's what I'm calling it.
Vincent decides, I'm not going to take this bump falling backwards where I can't see what's below me. I'm just going to let this man go as I have him at his vertical peak.
Yes.
And he just lets Buddy Lee Parker go.
He left him.
What's that maneuver Pete Dunne used to do? The X-plex, you know, where you kind of pushed him off out of his vertical suplex?
Yes.
It's almost that, except he just lets him fall.
Yeah, it's a lot like the Jason Jett
suplex. I've not seen Jason Jett do that.
Well, watch for when you get to 2001 Thunder here in about 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, can't wait.
I
think it's more likely we'll see Easy Money before then.
Oh, so yeah.
If he was doing that as Easy Money, but I don't
know. He might have been. I don't know. But I'm wondering if, I don't know why Virgil decided to attempt the suplex in the first place. But I think it is clear that he may have noticed, because this is WCW Pro, so this has the elevated ring platform, which means...
But I mean, if he was doing it on Nitro or Thunder, there wouldn't have been fucking barriers. The man's a moron. Sorry, I know he's dead, but like, Jesus Christ, one of the dumbest wrestlers I've ever seen.
Yeah, so... he was a brainbuster on the apron. Virgil was a what could have been an indie darling in another lifetime.
No, get out of here. I'm not letting you say that.
he then the match keeps going, which is also my favorite thing, because
yeah, because somehow, miraculously, Buddy Lee Parker is in fact not dead and his neck is still attached to the rest of his body. Yeah. How? I do not know. I think it's just the pure thickness of his fucking neck.
Virgil doesn't get a lot of squash matches, so no matter if this man lived or died, he was going to get his shit in.
And his shit consisted of a laying down million-dollar dream.
Yes. Yeah, it was. It definitely was.
I mean, look, it's a four-star match.
It is a four-star match, exactly. But no, seriously, so you had never seen this, right?
No, I had never seen
it. How wild did you go for whatever that was on the apron?
I yelped. I had to go back and watch it because I was stupidly taking notes, and as I saw the bump, I was like, what the fuck was that?
Mm-hmm.
And I had to go back. It's one of the most batshit insane things I've ever seen.
I
like to think I've seen a lot of wrestling.
Yeah, this is just one of those things. You gave me a little peek behind the curtain. I couldn't pick anything during the time frame of the show. So 98 to 2001, which cut off a lot of my more esoteric WCW C-show purchase ideas. So I'm lucky this happened in 97, because I was really, there's a lot of C-show, D-show things that I would have put on this list.
This was actually on TV the day of World War III, 97.
Wow. So I wonder, Buddy should have not have been in that Battle Royal. I hope he didn't show up just to keep kayfabe.
Listen, I'm sure nobody in WCW cared about fucking continuity between WCW Pro and pay-per-views. An insane match. But one thing I do want to mention is I love that WCW Pro set.
Mm-hmm.
We need to bring back something like that in 2025. Like, somebody needs to do a good version of studio wrestling like that.
Like with the elevated ring on the spinning platform?
Maybe not the elevated ring that's going to, end careers.
No, imagine the drama and discourse that Bryan Danielson could cause if he was allowed to bump onto that. The sheer drama he could create.
Bryan Danielson has broken a toe because of that damn elevated platform. Yeah, I'm sure he'd find a way to get a fucking an arm stuck somewhere.
Yeah, holding the low back.
Yeah, maybe it'd be worth it for that then. But just an insane match. I'm so glad you picked it. What I am not glad you picked is our next match, because I am on record as saying one of my least favorite acts in all of wrestling in the 90s is the Public Enemy.
Well, this wasn't a Public Enemy match, so you should be fine.
No, it was not a Public Enemy match. It was a match involving the two members of the Public Enemy, as it's titled as Rocco Rock versus Johnny Grunge, but it is in fact Cheetah Kid versus unnamed.
Johnny Rotten.
Johnny Rotten.
Would have been
I wasn't sure if he was Johnny Grunge yet at that time.
No, he was the as creative Johnny Rotten.
Yes. I did enjoy the Cheetah Kid coming to ringside to Welcome to the Jungle.
Mm-hmm. So this I put this on here. This is kind of the most trolly pick that I made here.
Which says something when our last match was with Vincent.
Yeah, no. I mean, the Vincent has a very redeemable, what the fuck moment. This match I remember seeing on a comp tape back when I was 17 or 18, and just being fascinated that, it's the Public Enemy. And it's one of those moments where you really realize, hey, Rocco Rock was pretty good. Why didn't he ever wrestle like this? He was a perfectly competent Tiger Mask ripoff.
Drugs, I'm gonna assume.
Well, drugs, sure. None of us want to end up like the Grunge. But
I would think being saddled with Johnny Grunge in 1993 had a lot to do with the downfall of the Cheetah Kids.
But what did you think about tights wearing, hip swiveling Johnny Grunge? Johnny Rotten.
Not a lot, I'll be honest. Even as Johnny Rotten and 100 pounds lighter, I still didn't think very much of him. The guy at ringside was fascinating, though.
I could not find out who this is.
So I'm going to assume this is Dolph Ziggler's dad.
Ooh.
Because he's got the bleach blonde hair. He's got the bright pink tights. He just screams, you know, Mr. Ziggler to me.
Mr. Ziggles, as Coach would say.
Mr. Nemeth.
Do you think Johnny Rotten is trying to be like... He looks like if Louis Spicoli started to cosplay as Mr. Perfect with the gear.
Ooh, yeah, I did note it was Perfect-esque. Yes. The singlet and the color,
what is
yeah.
this? What do you think this means that Johnny Rotten thought a lot of his skills at this time, or?
I don't know. I think maybe it was the only thing that he could get that looked somewhat flattering, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I don't know what the early 90s version of High Spots was where everyone got their gear from, so. As you know, you are aware, everybody in the early 2000s bought the same gear from High Spots. So mm-hmm. I'm assuming everybody did the same in the early 90s from whatever magazine.
Yeah, like you open up your Wrestling Insider, flip to the back, buy your knee pads.
just a list of like singlets and pants.
Yeah, so this isn't in America.
Isn't it?
I believe this is from Germany.
Oh, okay.
And in my research, these two had a couple of matches with each other. This is the only one I could find tape of. So this may be the match that legend has it got Paul Heyman to take a look at these two.
I thought Heyman had seen them wrestle a lot. Isn't that that's a story that Heyman says.
Yeah, he also may have seen them. Do you know the other significance of this pairing? They have another match with each other on a much more significant date.
Is it the fucking Jimmy Crockett taping that never actually happened?
No, these two were the dark match of the first ever Monday Night Raw.
Oh, okay. No, didn't know that.
This is a pretty clipped match. And
yeah.
I thought it was pretty fun. It's very inoffensive. I enjoy early 90s crowd brawling much more than I enjoy late 2000s crowd brawling. There's something fun about handheld footage from the ground looking up at the ring that just makes me feel nostalgic.
Well, being that, you know, we've both talked about how good in-ring Cheetah Kid was.
Yeah.
And for those who, I'm sure anyone listening to this is aware, Ted Petty was well-regarded within the industry.
Mm-hmm.
So well-regarded that, in fact, one of the big tournaments in all of independent wrestling is the Ted Petty Invitational.
Mm-hmm.
So, Aaron, I'm going to test your knowledge.
Oh, God. It's happening again.
How many TPI winners you can name. So, the tournament started in the year 2000. Was the inaugural tournament. And last results I can find is 2021. So in that time, we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 tournaments. I can only see 2 repeat winners.
Okay.
So we are looking for 14 names.
14 names? Is this everyone that competed in the both tournaments?
No, that just won a TPI. So anyone that has won a TPI.
There were 14 TPIs?
There's been 14 winners. There's been 16 TPIs.
What?
Yeah.
Wait, what? Who's putting on these 16 TPIs?
I'm assuming it started in IWA.
That just sounds...
It's listed on Wikipedia as Independent Wrestling Association Mid-South. So IWA Mid-South is still... running TPIs and up to the year 2021, apparently.
I'm going
to
ruin my own credibility. I had no idea the TPI was running that late in the game.
Yeah.
So
it runs from 2000 through to 2008.
Right.
And then there's a long gap. And then 2015 to 2021.
Okay, once it comes back, I have no idea that it comes back. Okay,
let's see. Can you name some TPI winners from between 2000 and 2008, we'll be fair.
Does it count if they should have won?
No, I want a winner.
Okay. Samoa Joe.
Samoa Joe is incorrect. You have not. He has not won a TPI.
Failed already.
Yeah. If this were the 5-star match game, you would.
Yeah, am I done now? Am I? Is
yeah, you would. You would have been. I'll give you another go. Go on.
Okay. Name another go. Name. Okay. Johnny Grunge.
Johnny Grunge is incorrect.
He should have. Okay, I knew he didn't win. I knew he didn't win.
I know.
That he may not even have been alive, but...
Let's go. Tour time lucky.
Okay.
Come on, think IWA.
I mean IWA, so Chris Hero.
Chris Hero is correct. He won it twice, the year 2000 and 2016.
Okay, great. So came... Okay. IWA. CM Punk.
CM Punk did not win it.
Oh.
I'm assuming he reached many a final because, you know, he was
why wouldn't he?
IWA been south for
what about BJ Whitmer?
BJ Whitmer did win it in 2002.
Ah, heck yeah. We're back in the game. Spider Nate Webb.
No, Spider Nate Webb has not won it.
This is bullshit.
Good guess though. He'd be a name I'd come up with. I'll list some names for you.
Mickey Knuckles.
Mickey Knuckles has not won it. No.
Wow.
I don't think she's allowed to wrestle anymore. Maybe she does. I don't know. I'm gonna list some winners here. 2001, Ace Steel. 2002, BJ Whitmer, as you said. 2003, Danny Daniels.
Oh, okay, that's great. Good for him.
2004, AJ Styles. 2005, Matt Sydal. 2006, Low Key. 2007, Mike Quackenbush.
Oh.
2008, Drake Younger. So a real list of cancel people here. 2015, Congo Kong. 2016, Chris Hero. 2017, somebody named Aaron Williams went back to back and won it 2017 and 2018.
Huh.
2019, Larry D. I don't know who that is. 2020, Tyler Matrix, who does not have a Wikipedia page. And 2021, Jake Crist. I don't know if that's the good Crist or the cancelled Crist.
I think that's the good Crist, because I think that's the Crist that still works.
Okay. He does not have a Wikipedia page, so I can't check.
The only person I didn't know there was Tyler Matrix.
Oh, who's Larry D?
Larry D is a big guy. He had an Impact run. For a moment, he teamed with another big guy. There were a couple big guys. Who's that one guy that's real big?
AC Romero?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Who's that one guy that's real big, AC Romero?
Sorry, I'm just looking at the list of names in the 2000 tournament. I got to run down these. So
please do.
The first round of the first ever TPI. American Kickboxer versus Breyer Wellington.
Whoa.
Chris Hero, Colt Cabana. Orion versus Hyzaya. Hyzaya. Shark Boy versus Ace Steel. BJ Whitmer versus Chip Fairway. Gavin Starr versus Harry Palmer. CM Punk versus Chucky Smooth and Suicide Kid versus Super Hentai.
Wow.
And somehow a guy named Harry Palmer got all the way to the final.
Got skills.
What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. We'll get back to your show in just a minute. Do want to let you know about a brand new sponsor, though, we have on the network, NordVPN. NordVPN aims to make the internet a better place for everybody. You can free your internet from online threats, censorship, and surveillance, as well as access content that is not available in your region. And this was one of the great ways that I use NordVPN. With WWE moving all their content to another streaming service internationally, you can use NordVPN to switch your region and access everything that they have on that new service. Now, on the flip side, say you still want access to where WWE used to have their content, and maybe you live outside the United States. Well, hey, NordVPN again is there to help. It's not just wrestling, though. If there's a sporting event or a TV show that's unavailable where you live, do not worry. You can still watch it with NordVPN. Just switch your virtual location to a country that is showing it. Plus, NordVPN is a great way to protect your private data like bank details and passwords, especially when you're traveling and using public Wi-Fi. One of the things that I love about NordVPN is that you can save money on flights, hotels, and subscriptions by virtually changing your location to a country with lower prices. As someone who travels a lot, you guys know vacations and all the other stuff. This is a tool that I use all the time to score better deals. Shop smarter with NordVPN. Come on, what are you doing? And don't worry about slow streaming either. NordVPN is the fastest VPN out there, so no more buffering or lagging. It even has a threat protection feature that blocks viruses and phishing sites. Best of all, you can use one account on up to 10 devices, and it costs about the same as a cup of coffee each month. Now, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to our link, nordvpn.com/voice, which will give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. Again, it's nordvpn.com/voice to get 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. Best of all, there's no risk. Nord has a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not happy, use that right there, 30-day money-back guarantee. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/voice to get 4 extra months on the 2-year NordVPN plan. One more time, nordvpn.com/voice to get 4 extra months on the 2-year NordVPN plan. And, of course, we want to thank NordVPN for sponsoring the podcast network. Now, back to your show.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Apparently maybe he was tough to beat.
Adam Pearce. Our Raw GM was in the 2001 tournament.
Oh, nice.
A couple of other standout names there. Tarek the Great, Mitch Ryder. American Kickboxer was still in around then. Super Dragon was in the 2002 tournament. Spider Knight Web, Nick Mondo. Super Ken Dragon. Anderson. Ken Anderson was in the TPI.
Super Dragon.
Matt Stryker. With the Y.
Which, okay.
So the good one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wait, which Matt Stryker do you consider the good one?
That's Unibrow Matt Stryker, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Some people might think differently.
After all of the years of commentary?
I think that a number of wrestlers in the Northeast might think that their Matt Stryker is the good one. That's all.
Those people would be wrong. Okay. Chris Daniels makes his first appearance in 2002 as well. And nice. M-Dog 20.
Nice.
I'm not going through the rest of them. Just,
okay.
I just thought that'd be a nice little segue on our trip.
Do you think the M and M-Dog stood for Matt?
I've thought about this long and hard for many years. And I'm going to say it stood for Moonsault.
Oh, okay. But like, if it was me, I would be E-Dog 20.
I mean, why?
What do you mean, why?
Why would you be E-Dog?
Because my first name's Aaron.
Yeah, but you're going on the assumption that M stands for Matt.
Well, yeah, Matt. Isn't it Matt Cross?
I mean, that's his name, sure.
Yeah, so the M stands for Matt.
You can't know that.
Matt Dog.
The first time I saw Matt Dog. Jesus Christ.
Maybe he was Matt Dog.
Maybe he was Matt Dog. Please. And there'd already been too many Matt Dogs in wrestling. First time I saw M Dog 20 live was in 2002.
That's great.
In a GAA hall, like 20 minutes from where I am currently, with like maybe 50 other people. It was insane. Anyway, let's move on to our next match.
Would you want to do a, like, if me and you get like super rich, would you want to do like a Johnny Grunge Invitational?
No.
Does it feel unfair that Ted Petty has gotten the Invitationals and Johnny Grunge gets grungy?
I think Johnny, even just talking about Johnny Grunge is more than he deserves.
Wow, that's really, okay.
Lee is canceled. I've seen far too many bad Public Enemy matches to care. Next up, we have some more WCW as we return to... I can't remember what year it came up.
1994.
It was 94, okay.
Yes.
We are deep in the midst of the Ron Simmons heel turn.
Yes.
as he is taking on Max Payne in a street fight. Aaron, why did you pick this match?
Okay, so I actually don't know. I don't know. I don't know exactly why I picked it. I was trying to find, like, so I'm originally from Iowa. Max Payne is also from Iowa. I was trying to find some kind of fun Max Payne match to put on here because he's such a curious cat. And this I mean,
we've all seen the Max Payne Cactus Jack Nasty Boys match.
Well, sure, yeah. So I didn't want to go with that. And I watched a couple. I watched one of his matches with Vader, and it just didn't hit the spot for me. And this also was another one of the better ways I could really express my love of WCW B shows, because this match is so weird. The setting is so weird. It's not even a regular Disney MGM taping space.
No, they're on some kind of set.
They're on some kind of movie set.
Yeah.
Some kind of just regular, like, generic back lot with fake houses and all that. And I think this was also a time when, I think this is worldwide, they were doing a lot of
Do you think as they were shooting the intro for Nitro, this match was going on behind any of those fake houses?
I mean, maybe. At any moment, one of the houses could have erupted with Lex Luger's face on it. I mean, it would have been a spoiler because this is 1994. But a lot of the C shows had this habit of doing weeks and weeks of different stipulation matches. If you go back, I remember there was one week they randomly did like a Sting Rick Rude tuxedo match, or Sting Cactus Jack in a street fight. Now this is, yeah, the Ron Simmons heel turn. He had just turned on Ice Train, sadly, RIP. And both of these guys do come out in street appropriate attire. You can tell they Max do. Payne's in his street attire because he's wearing a headband.
Oh, was that how he separated between regular Max Payne and street Max Payne?
Yeah, because regular Max, you know, ring gear Max Payne is still the giant shirt with pants.
Mm.
But this one has a headband, so he's ready to fight. Do you have any memories of Max Payne? Let's talk Payne.
Not really. I mean, I've only really recall the aforementioned Cactus Jack tag team match with the Nasty Boys. Mm-hmm. My memories of watching, you know, worldwide in the early 90s is mostly William Regal TV title matches, because, you know, they were a big part of worldwide over here. No, like I really don't have many memories of Max Payne at all, sadly.
For the listeners at home, I was making a frown face.
You look very upset by this.
Well, when you think William Regal and the B and Z shows, were you able to see the 5-match series him and Ric Flair did for the Marquis of Queensberry Cup?
I don't
on the
know.
B shows.
I see. See, we got worldwide, so we would have Gordon Solie and, I think it would alternate between who would do color with him fairly regularly, but like a big part of worldwide being on UK TV was that, you know, Lord Steven Regal was a big part of it. So I do recall him having matches with like Arn Anderson and, people of that ilk, you know, a lot of TV title matches that went fucking 15, 20 minutes and, you know, he'd escape by the skin of his teeth. Real classic Regal stuff. But nothing stands out as I remember that match. Like, Sting was obviously a big, like, the big fan favorite, so you'd always get a Sting match. But
yeah,
what era it was, I just recall it being the early 90s. I can't remember exactly what you'd see.
Oh, yeah, so so I just chose this match because I thought the setting was really interesting. The ring apron is different.
Yeah.
It looks more like a set of curtains.
Yeah, it's real weird. I think, like, if you were to go back and find this whole episode, I think this would be, like, a real kind of standalone thing, because I don't think they did a full set of tapings within the setting.
I don't know. I'd have to, like, spend an afternoon watching 1994 worldwide, which I will do. Don't threaten me. But otherwise, I thought this was a pretty fun match.
Yeah, they worked hard. I'll give them that.
Yeah, they used weapons. They used a lot of just one board. One board of wood was used relentlessly.
One thing I didn't like is the finish. I thought the finish sucked.
I thought the finish was very funny.
So Max Payne gives Simmons a suplex on the outside, which Simmons proceeds to no-sell and just stumble back into the ring. Where he stands with his back turned until Max Payne slowly gets back into the ring. We see Simmons, you know, doing the classic heel thing of cradling something in his hands, an international object, as it were, to use to his advantage to clock Max Payne. So he hits Max Payne with something, pins him. He proceeds to put the thing back into his tights or into his jeans, and he gets the three count. And it takes about maybe 15, 20 seconds later, the announcers tell us, he used a hammer.
Yes.
He did not use a hammer. There was no way he used a hammer.
Well, this was a street fight.
It was.
So concealing this from the ref was
pointless.
A baffling choice.
Yes.
Also, I wanted a way to work Van Hammer into this, and clearly Van Hammer making an appearance here.
Yes. Thankfully, the only Van Hammer on the show.
Could a feud with Van Hammer be far off for Ron Simmons because of his use of the weapon? Storytelling.
I mean, for Ron Simmons' sake, I would hope it's far, far away.
I don't know how much longer Ron is in the company in 1994.
When does Farouk start? It's 95,
well,
isn't it?
95.
I think it's late 95 he starts.
So, but he's in ECW by late 94.
He does have an ECW run. I thought the match, you know, it was what it was. It was classic kind of early 90s WCW hardcore. The finish was bad. Speaking of classic WCW, this is
I thought you were going to say speaking of bad and I was going to get real mad.
Oh, you're going to get real mad. Trust me.
Okay. Let's have it out.
Some classic WCW from December 1990.
Yeah.
It is. And this is what I imagine is very much so Aaron's wheelhouse. We've got Arn Anderson defending his TV title versus the Z-Man, Tom Zenk. I did like that they did a real kind of build up to this match. They show you Arn beating the Great Muta for the title at the beginning of the year. I think it was January of 1990. And then we see Arn versus the Z-Man from the summer, where Z-Man had the title won and the Four Horsemen come in and interrupt the pin and get the DQ. So I do think they did a good job building to the match in like the couple of minutes of the video we saw. Now it's a Z-Man match, so to me that puts a real limit on things, no matter how good Arn Anderson is. Aaron, I can see you chomping at the bits to defend Tom Zenk here.
It's not that I'm going to defend Tom Zenk, but I'm going to wax nostalgic about Tom Zenk. You got to keep in mind, when I saw this match,
Was it December 1990?
It was December 1990. And I was probably at my grandma's house, because my parents would drop me and my sister off at grandma's house on Fridays into Saturdays, which is when I would have seen this show, probably maybe Saturday night. And I was 8 years old. When you're 8 years old, Z-Man seems pretty cool. He wears bright colored tights. He's got a rockin' theme song. He does a drop kick. Like, for an 8 year old who just wants to cheer on baby faces, you don't need that much to get excited.
That's true. Look, so, he's very much of the time. I will give him that.
This was probably the first ever title change that I saw as it happened.
Oh, okay. Okay, so I can understand why you selected as much.
So I had never seen someone that I cheered for win a title as it was going on. So I know I was pretty pumped. This is also, I think, so I, you know, if I were to put on my like thinking cap, you know, this is like 3.25. Like, it's a pretty baseline Arn Anderson TV title match.
Mm.
But I think it's a really good representation of why Arn is so good. Because he straddles between being this serious worker who will pick a body part and work you over, but some of his selling, whether he's going down for like a sunset flip or whether he's taking that flip bump when he comes off the top and does the punch to the gut, he works in these small bits of selling that are just slapsticky enough not to break his facade, but entertaining, but fun enough to be like entertaining and engaging.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect description of Arn. He's good enough and tough enough that you can buy him as a challenger for any person. But you can also believe that the Z-Man could beat this guy because he does have that, as you said, the slapstick, the little things that he does that you go, Arn just can't put it together sometimes.
There's some great stalling the clock in this too.
Yeah.
If you ever want to like WCW TV title matches, whether it's Regal, like you mentioned,
Arn,
yeah. Masterclass in stalling the clock.
JR says it in the build up to this match, Arn is the greatest TV champ in the history of the NWA at this point, or WCW, whatever it was, he said. I was going to say that, you know, the point you made about Sabu and how Sabu would drag people into Sabu matches, Arn very much carries Z-Man in an Arn match here. As you said, it's the classic TV title formula where the babyface starts out hot, he's getting, you know, he gets a couple of near falls, and then, you know, Arn fakes the knee injury.
Yeah.
Gets the cheap shot.
Oh,
takes over.
Oh, I gotta. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead, but I got a point about that knee injury.
Yeah, he fakes the knee injury. Gets the cheap shot. Takes over for, I want to say like 7 or 8 minutes. Then we get the count to the last. You know, we get the announcer saying the ring announcer saying 5 minutes remaining. We get the hot finish, and Zenk wins with the proto missile dropkick. It's not Booker T-esque, I'll say that much. But he gets a clean win.
He just lands in a weird way.
Yeah, he gets the clean win. The crowd goes wild. But go on, you want to wax lyrical about Arn's selling of the knee.
Okay, yeah. So I hear a lot of people complaining, some would call it bitching and moaning, when Buddy Matthews fakes an injury in a match and has the doctor come over and, hey, I'm hurt. Oh, I hate when they do this. Or when Danielson does it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm watching this match in 1990, watching Arn Anderson fake an injury to sucker in the baby faces. And I'm just saying, all y'all need to relax, chill, get worked once in a while.
Yep.
Yeah.
Do you know what I loved about it? Is both Bob Caudle and JR say, you know what? I didn't see his knee buckle, but it must have. And there's like that plausible deniability that, Carl says, look, I was watching Z-Man more closely than I was watching Arn when he went into the buckle, so I didn't see his knee, but, you know, it must have buckled underneath him. And Arn didn't sell it too long. He sold it just the right amount. Just a real good, example of how you can work the fake injury.
Yeah, so this is just a fun match. I like Z-Man. This is to little Aaron's heart. And when you watch Z-Man, sometimes you got to think with Tom Zenk. Picture, like, Z-Man is like, what if Ricky Steamboat was mediocre? The most mediocre babyface in the world. And then you get Tom Zenk. So that's how I kind of view him.
Right. And our last match, on our Sabu sandwich to close out our episode, it's Sabu taking on the Lightning Kid from the 17th of April 1993. It's the NWA Grand Slam 93, promoted by Dennis Caruso, who's name dropped many times by the commentators.
Many times.
They are looking to get paid. This match was great.
Had you seen this before?
No, I'd never seen this.
Oh my gosh. Okay, this is a tape trading classic.
Okay, I'm watching wrestling since like 1990, but I was not into tape trading. I was late to the game in that sense.
This is one reason that I put it on here, yeah, because...
Yeah, no, this match rules. God, like it... I almost don't want to break it down too much in the sense that I want people to go watch it because I think I forgot to mention this, but we will have the link in the show notes for all of these matches. Aaron very nicely made a playlist on YouTube. Just the match fucking rules. Like, you want to talk about how good Sean Waltman was so early in his career. And then it's, as you said, Sabu having... the very early Sabu match, but Waltman is just there fighting with him all the way through it. Mm-hmm. And that's what it feels like. It feels like a real fight with these kind of insane, for 1993 standards, athletic maneuvers. And I wish the commentary really annoyed me because they kept talking about, Lightning Kid's busted open and there's blood everywhere. I mean, it was a good cut, but it wasn't, you know, fucking the Muda scale. Like, he wasn't getting a 10 on the Muda scale.
No, but...
if they had a focused on just how innovative the actual action was, they would have done a much better job.
Right. The blood, however, when I first saw pictures of this match, would have been when it hit, like, the aftermags in, like, 93, late 93. And the focus, I remember, like, being a kid opening that up and seeing the pictures of the bloody Lightning Kid. And he's only a month away from beating Razor on Raw.
Yeah.
And so by the time, like, photos of this match came out, he's already been on WWE TV and been featured. And so it was kind of a mind-blowing moment for me. This would have been one of those matches that made me really aware of the independence because I'm 11 years old and this guy that was on TV, and then I open up the magazine and he's all bloody, which you never would see in WWF.
Yeah.
And he's fighting this guy named Sabu who looks like a crazy person. This match, and I think it helped because of the video quality, it's just a grungy, there's a lot of state-of-the-art stuff going on, but it still feels like a fight.
Like, if this match were to take place on Collision tonight, you would be fucking, you'd be so happy. Like, that's how good, like, this match could take place in 2025 and you would not be disappointed. It's just, the match is epitomized by, like, just that manic Sabu energy. And Kid just matches them throughout. They are just throwing their bodies at each other. They are just doing whatever they can to keep the other guy down. There's like fucking Kid is flying over the top rope. Sabu is flying over the top rope. There's fucking tables. I think the most insane spot in the whole match is Sabu gets a top rope hurricanrana. Now bear in mind, it's 1993. And then he puts him right back up, puts Kid right back up on top again and goes for a second hurricanrana. But I don't know if it's a combination of Sabu slips or Kid holds on or what happens, but Sabu lands on the top of his fucking head.
Yes.
Scary. Like, absolutely terrifying.
Frightening. This is also one of the rare matches where Sabu gets that single leg takedown that he always goes for.
Do you know what? I do love... no matter the match, Sabu just attempts those single leg takedowns for the first minute of every match.
I like to think he's trying to wrestle in every match. Every match he wants to go out, have like a Tim Thatcher style grapple fest, but people deny that single leg and he just loses it. Like something flips. Like, oh, also there's a lot of unnecessary Humperdinck in this match.
Oh God, so much Humperdinck.
Yeah, so, and talking about Humperdinck, and talking about what a bulbous mass Humperdinck is on the outside.
Hey, Stan, this guy's so fat. I can't believe he's managing Sabu. Are you allowed to manage when you're that fat?
That's the commentary talking about the Humperdinck.
I did like that the finish to the match is like there's a ref bump. Sabu just decides to take a cheap shot at the ref who he'd been trying to get at for the whole match. And the ref calls for the bell. And these two just keep brawling. Yes. And they attempt to keep brawling. And like this feud must continue, except Kid gets signed to the fucking WWF.
Well, that's why you had the gentleman, Jerry Lynn, run in.
Yeah, I just thought this match ruled. I just loved it. I thought it was brilliant.
Yes, it was so great. The ending of this match did set up the next Grand Slam 2 in July, which is the follow-up with Jerry Lynn versus Sabu.
So not quite as good, I'm sure.
I mean, I think it's probably still really good. Like, 93 Jerry Lynn and 93 Kid are pretty much paired at the hip buddies at this point, so.
They even had matching gear on this show.
Yeah.
But all of that said, Aaron, we've reached the end of our sandwich. I think we can all agree it was quite delicious.
Thank you.
The matches varied incredibly. Some good, some bad, some absolutely wild. So before we go, have you got anything to plug?
Not necessarily. You can see me on X or on Blue Sky at Miss Aaron Quinn or Aaron Quinn, respectively. You can catch me in the VOW Discord. Give me a shout out. I think I'm doing another thing on the network here, recording next week. So just keep refreshing your feed. I'm popping up all over the place all of a sudden. It's troubling times when I'm on the Voices of Wrestling feed multiple times in a month. So,
all over the VOW Podcast Network.
Yeah.
So I want to thank you for being here, for filling in for Dave this week. Yeah. I will be back in 2 weeks' time with another special guest for special edition number 2. I want to thank you all for joining us, and I will talk to you in 2 weeks' time. Good night.
Thanks everyone for listening to another episode of Days of Thunder. Days of Thunder was produced by Lee Malone and edited by me, Dave Ryan. To keep up to date with the show and find all the ways to listen to us, you can follow us on Twitter at WCW Thunderpod or click the Linktree link in our Twitter bio or in the show notes. I am at The Day to Dave on Twitter and Lee is at Malone_713. Days of Thunder is a part of the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. Follow the VOW network anywhere good podcasts are sold for more fine podcasts than you can shake a stick at. Thanks.
Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.
Chicago, it's no mystery that Chevy is your best bet for the unpredictable spring ahead. The snow and ice may be gone, but the spring plot thickens at your local Chevy dealer, where you'll find the true MO of SUVs. If you're thinking about taking all the twists and turns in a new Chevy, you're not alone. The right vehicle makes all the difference when it comes to safety, confidence, and comfort on the road. You saw the Chevy lineup at the auto show. Now it's time to see which one you can identify. And don't worry, they can't see you behind the glass. Need the power and durability of a Silverado, the all-weather confidence of an Equinox or Blazer, the spacious comfort of a Traverse, Tahoe, or Suburban, or the sporty city-friendly Trax? Your local Chevy dealer has exactly what you need to solve the case like a pro, so don't wait. Head to ChevyDriveChicago.com today. Browse the newest models, special offers, locate your nearest Chevy dealer, and start shopping online. Things are warming up out there, and you need a vehicle you can trust. Find yours now at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Chevy, together, let's drive.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.